recovery of the American Catholic identity and equipping all Catholics to take co-responsibility for Christ's Church.
This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
America is as divided as it has been in 150 years.
Politics is symptomatic of the culture.
They don't have a personal relationship with Christ.
We've been sacramentalized, but not evangelized.
Why should Washington listen to us when our own house is in disarray?
The Church's greatest riches are her people.
Share the contagious joy of being a friend of Christ.
Story after story after story of people who have had inexplicable healings.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
That's beautifully said, Al.
Thanks for your voice for liberty.
It's like a homecoming each time on your program.
Clear to me that you've thought these things through at a deep level.
Let's build the church, and then we'll bless the nations.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Glad to be with you. We've got quite a bit in front of us for the next 2 hours. Let me tell you where we're heading. Coming up is going to be on March 15th and March 16th. There'll be the release and screening of a new film called The Divine Plan. It looks at God's work through John Paul II and Ronald Reagan. It's being, the filmmaker is Robert Orlando, and he is relying a good deal upon our friend Paul Kengor, who's written a Pope and a President, looking at the relationship between St. John Paul II and Ronald Reagan. We'll tell you about that. Also, Steve Ray and I are getting together and leading a pilgrimage to Poland coming up in August. We're going to be following in the footsteps of the Polish saints, John Paul II, St. Faustina, Maximilian Kolbe, and few countries have faced hardship as great as Poland during the 20th century. Nevertheless, the church has been what has buoyed them over those troubled waters. So we're going to be talking about Poland. Also coming up today, we will take another overview or get a reaction to the Pope Francis's summit on child protection. We're going to be joined by Peter Isley, himself and a survivor. And we're also going to talk about what's happening in Nicaragua with Alejandro Bermudez. Again, the Catholic Church playing the role of the honest broker, trying to avoid civil war in Nicaragua. But first, let's get to today's headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Tuesday, March 5th. It's the feast of St. John Joseph of the Cross. Today's news is brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. President Trump plans to visit Alabama Friday after Sunday's deadly tornadoes.
It's been a tragic situation, but a lot of good work is being done.
Speaking at the White House, he said he wants a first-hand look at the damage wrought by the tornadoes. So far, 23 deaths were claimed by the storms in the eastern part of the state. The Supreme Court won't get into the debate over whether churches should be allowed to receive public funds for historic preservation. Lisa Carter has more.
The highest court in the land refused to hear a case from New Jersey. The state Supreme Court ruled last year that religious institutions are not eligible for government funds. That would seem to go against a 2017 U.S. Supreme Court ruling. The justices ruled 2 years ago that churches can be eligible for purely secular grant programs for things such as playground renovations. Lisa Carter, NBC News Radio.
Authorities say three explosive devices have been found near London airports and a major train station. NBC's Matt Bradley says one of the IEDs detonated outside London Heathrow Airport.
That was the only one that actually exploded. And if you call being effective basically burning up and kind of starting a small fire, then it was effective.
Scotland Yard says the airport was not affected as no flights were canceled. There are also no report of injuries. Scotland Yard says they are treating this as a terrorist incident. The controversial leader of Papa John's will resign from its board of directors. John Shatner will resign after an independent director is appointed, according to the agreement. He walked away from his job as the company's CEO 2 years ago after using a racial slur during a call with a marketing company. He stepped down as chairman of the company's board a few months later. I'm Steve Clark, Ave Maria Radio News.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Representatives of Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega have finally begun talks with opposition leaders nearly a year after violent protests threatened to tear the country apart. Now, before the talks began, dozens of anti-government protesters were released. The Vatican's ambassador to Nicaragua and Managua's cardinal were both present as observers, and the church, of course, continuing its involvement in the crisis. Joining me to discuss it is Alejandro Bermudez, director of ACI Prensa, the world's largest Catholic news agency in Spanish, as well as executive director of Catholic News Agency and the Portuguese agency ACI Digital. Alejandro is a frequent contributor to National Catholic Register, our Sunday Visitor, and he hosts several Spanish language programs on EWTN. Alejandro, good to have you back with me. Thanks.
Good to be here, Al. God bless you.
So we've got a civic alliance that has grown up in Nicaragua. What is that civic alliance?
Well, it's basically everybody except the few followers of President Ortega, to put it in short. The support of President Ortega has diminished. And the way he is, remains in power is because of the militias that are armed by Cuban forces and basically try to enforce his rule among the people. But he has been seeing the writing of the walls with what is happening in Venezuela.
So Cuba is giving him support. Is Cuba also supporting Maduro in Venezuela?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, the Cuban presence in Venezuela is tremendous. There is more than 30,000 people between supposedly doctors and teachers, but are mostly agents.
Okay. So and this is Cuba's desire to uphold any experiments in socialism in Central and South America. Is that what they're about?
Yes, and also it's a reason for survival. Remember that Cuba is an island in which the whole economic system has collapsed.
Right.
So they depend on Venezuelan oil. They depend on Nicaraguan meat to survive. They need satellites to survive as a revolution.
Now, is Nicaragua in the same economic collapse that Venezuela is?
No.
Okay.
No, it is not. Ortega has been moving politically in the last 30 years from hardcore Soviet communist to someone that wants to basically remain in power. So the system continues to be a system in which you still have businesses, small initiatives. So it's a fairly viable country.
Okay. What is the primary motive that is shrinking his influence, right? Because the Civic Alliance is looking to diminish his control. Why do they want him gone?
They want him gone because basically he has found ways by gaming the Constitution and changing the Constitution to remain in power.
Okay.
And this has become a power of Ortega's friends. So it has become a corrupt dictatorship with some overcoating of being a democracy. So they want this corrupt system of a group of people that wants to control the country for God knows how long to be gone and to have a true democratic system.
Has he been relying on, imprisoning his political opponents?
Not as much as Venezuela. And the reason is that, remember, Al, that Nicaragua has a very strong tradition of revolution. It was a revolution that toppled the dictatorship of President Somoza in the 80s. It was a revolution that toppled the Sandinistas through the Contras. So is very, very feisty people, and he knows that he can't control all of them. So he's not near close to what is happening in Venezuela. Plus, in Venezuela, you have the significant support of Cuba, because Cuba is fighting for its life in Venezuela because of the free oil that is receiving from Maduro. So in Nicaragua, the situation is not the same. And he has seen, as I said before, the writing of the wall of how Secretary Pompeo has demonstrated that the United States is not willing to give them a pass. So Ortega had to sit down with the opposition to talk. He doesn't have another way out.
And what role are the bishops playing in this civic alliance?
Well, the bishops, Al, have been very, very careful to express their concerns with the specific things that have been done by the government, but not to become part of the opposition party. Because remember, there are still people and there are still Catholics who support Ortega, and the bishops do not want to divide the church. On the contrary, they want to be an element of unity. And with Cardinal Leopoldo Brenes from Managua, they have been doing a tremendous job in that sense of being able now to be called by both sides to sit in the table as observers.
So they're positioning themselves, what, to be honest brokers here rather than they're not posing as revolutionaries. They're trying to be honest brokers between the different factions?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes. They try to be honest brokers, and they honestly are. They have shown that although they have received the rage of the Sandinistas, of the ruling party, as you have remembered, you have covered in your show the aggressions against priests, against church,
yes,
against Catholic processions, and the government keeps saying that they are not responsible for that, that some people in their name are doing that. So so the bishops have maintained a tremendous self-control and a really pastoral attitude. So now they can be trusted by everybody. And Ortega, even if he doesn't like them, he knows is the only ones that are going to give him credibility to any conversation that is going to happen.
Okay. To what degree are the Catholic people of Nicaragua looking to dump Ortega? Does he have any support among Catholics?
Well, the whole population is Catholic, so you will definitely find
some
many Catholics that support Ortega. That's why the church has to be also very, very careful not to appear as a political force. But having said that, the vast majority of the people want a change. They want clean, open elections. And if Ortega runs and wins an open election, which at this time is impossible, but if that happens, so be it. But they want a genuine democratic system.
Okay. One of the other things they want, I assume, is the release of political prisoners?
Yes, and that's a sticky point because the government claims that they don't have any.
Okay,
you know, the same Cuban argument. No. He went to jail because he's corrupt and they threw something on them to make it stick, but it doesn't. People doesn't believe it.
Okay. Are there economic measures that this civic alliance is pushing for that Ortega is resisting?
Not really. It's strange, but Ortega has given up any desire to impose a socialist system. He just wants to remain in power.
Yeah.
It's one of those crazy things of a dictatorship. So, yes, the alliance believes that in a truly democratic system, there is less chance of corruption, and they understand that in a small country, I mean, in any country, but especially in a small country, corruption takes away a lot of the resources that should be going to development and to the people.
That's true. To sustain, that's right. To remain, to sustain his power. So they just passed. And correct me if I'm wrong here. They just passed a tax reform in which they're trying to spend down debt that they have. That tax reform is actually going to hurt people, right? I mean, that's not going to be something that people will benefit from.
Correct. Remember that now that Venezuela has collapsed, the free oil that was flowing to Nicaragua and was flowing to Cuba is not flowing anymore. We need to only a small amount keep flowing to Cuba. But there is no free ride anymore. So the government, in the midst of this corrupt situation, needs to get its hands on some further funds. And, you know, taxing is one of the few ways that they have.
They had a huge deficit last year. Is that right?
Yes. The economy is promising. Nicaragua has a promising economy, and if you see among the number of migrants that are coming to the United States are Salvadorans or Hondurans, but not Nicaraguans.
I see.
Because it's a country in which you can stay. The economy could work.
There's still enough hope.
There is hope, but they need to get rid of a corrupt system.
Okay. Thank you once again, Alejandro, for giving us an insight into what's going on. We'll talk about Venezuela soon. And thanks for telling us about Nicaragua.
Very well. God bless you all.
Alejandro Bermudez, again, weighing in on Central and South American topics, which, again, Catholics are a major part of those worlds.
Hey, man, this is Chris Stefanik. Are you up for a challenge this Lent? If you're ready to take things to the next level, head to menriseup.org and join me and men from around the world starting March 6th for the Rise 30-Day Challenge. Rise has transformed thousands of men's lives with practical tools that have taken your life and relationships to the next level. Everywhere I go, men are telling me how much of an impact Rise has had on themselves and their families. Rise starts on Ash Wednesday. Go to menriseup.org to register today. That's menriseup.org.
Have you thought about what you're doing for Lent this year? The St. Paul Center is launching its newest video Bible study, Genesis to Jesus. Developed by Scripture teacher Scott Hahn, Genesis to Jesus teaches participants to read Scripture from the Catholic perspective. And starting Ash Wednesday, this study is offered at no charge. More information is available at stpaulcenter.com. That's stpaulcenter.com.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting On the Mind of Christ. Each week we go into the Ave Maria CD library. We pull on a talk or two to see what our Lord might have to say to us. Most of these talks are recorded at area gatherings and conferences. Most of the speakers are nationally known. The topics are varied, but they are all centered on the Lord, and they all are worth your listening time. You're back for Mass. It's not yet dinner time. Why not sit back and join us? Be fed on the Lord. Listen this and every Sunday afternoon at 3 for Putting on the Mind of Christ on 990 WDEO in the Metro Detroit area and 1440 WMAX in the Saginaw Valley. Putting on the Mind of Christ is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
I'm Al Cresta. I want to announce that Steve Ray and I will be going on pilgrimage to the great land of Poland, August 21st to August 30th.
We're going to follow John Paul II, Maria Faustina and the Divine Mercy, and Maximilian Kolbe. We're even going to visit Auschwitz and see the place where Maximilian Kolbe gave his life in the cell there.
People can get more information at AveMariaRadio.net. And where else, Steve?
CatholicConvert.com. Click on the big pilgrimage banner or call 866-468-1420.
Fire on the Earth's Peter Herbeck on Living for God and for the World's Possessions.
Whatever they are, the things you want to possess and have in this world, we sometimes hide them from God. We don't want to bring them into our relationship with God because we're afraid He might say something we don't want to hear about those things. You can't have both. And Jesus is saying, as long as you hold on to those things, you're not going to make progress. At the end of your life, when I call you home, the story of your life will have been written. It will be all there for my Father to see. What did you want in this world? Did you really seek God? Did you love God first? If you did that, there will be a glorious story that's communicated for all eternity. But friends, if we were half in and half out, or Jesus talks about as being lukewarm, that mainly our Christianity, our Catholicism, is kind of driven by a sort of slight sense of guilt, that's all going to be revealed. And there'll be tremendous sadness. And the scripture says we will pound our chests with regret and cry out, what was I thinking? So that's why the Apostle Peter says, strive, friends, make every effort. For if you do this, you will never fall. Embrace it, run after it.
Peter Herbeck spreads fire on the earth, weekday mornings at 6:30 and again at 11:45 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. We continue to unpack the events of a week in Rome at the Conference to Protect Minors, and we've been inviting many people who were there to give us their impression of what was accomplished and what wasn't. Joining me right now is Peter Isley. He's a founding member of Ending Clergy Abuse and also a founding member of SNAP. He was abused by a priest in Wisconsin, and he was there in Rome for the summit. And, Peter, it's good to have you with me. Thanks.
Thank you.
Your general impression of the conference, did it accomplish what you'd hoped it would accomplish? Did it even come close?
Well, I mean, there's sort of two things about it, I guess, we look at it. One is that having the summit itself was historic and important, that no matter what happened during it, the acknowledgement that sexual abuse by clergy, especially of children and minors, is a global problem. It's a global issue. And that acknowledgement has taken a long time. So in and of itself, I mean, that I think is incredibly important, historic. On the other hand, it didn't result in what minimally needed to have been done there. I mean, Pope Francis had called this thing. He had called everybody together, these National Bishops Conference presidents from all around the world, and long overdue. And from our perspective, which we feel is pretty reasonable and minimal, he needed to really deliver something substantial. And what we believe he needed to do, I think a lot of people do, is that he needed to definitively state and to create in church law, universal church law, zero tolerance. Both zero tolerance for clergy that assault children, that if you've done that, if you've been determined to have done that, and around the world they know of many priests that have done that already, that they're going to be immediately removed from ministry and removed from the priesthood. And secondly, zero tolerance for bishops and cardinals that have covered up these sex crimes. And they too need to be laicized. And, you know, those two things are the foundation of change.
Mm-hmm.
And without that change in law, you can't, you know, make the other changes that they're trying to make. And so that wasn't done, and that could have been done and should have been done.
I've advocated for a long time that there be a global database of those who have had credible allegations against them, knowing what happened, what the remedy was. If victims want to be posted, that's fine with me. It's up to the victims. But what I don't understand is, for all the willingness to do something that I hear on the part of bishops and the Holy See, what I don't understand is, why are they avoiding the kind of personal accountability? What bishops have actually been called out as having failed in this regard? There's only a handful of them, as I understand it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It depends on the circumstance and how big the fire is to put the fire out in a particular place.
Right.
We met with the Planning Council of the Summit on Wednesday at the Vatican. So that's Archbishop Scicluna, Cardinal Supic, Cardinal Garcias, and Father Zolnar, right?
Okay.
And we expected Pope Francis to be there.
Yeah.
But he wasn't there. That was our first question. Where is he?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, where is he? Do you know where he is? Can you locate him? because it was like the whole thing was about, you know, this constant, listen to survivors. We're listening to survivors.
Right.
You know, I've never felt so much survivor love coming from them.
Okay.
And it's like, where is he? And he's out there, you know, saying some things, actually, while we were meeting in the square, saying some stuff that I found pretty interesting. But, you know, the two points you're making are really interesting. Now, you know, during this meeting, and the thing is, we didn't go in there to tell our story. The survivors that met in there, you know, these are people who are running organizations of survivors around the world.
Sure.
I mean, they're working with thousands of survivors. You know, this is the brain trust that I would think you'd want to talk to.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so, you know, none of this, you know, you've heard our stories, you've made it clear in your words that you understand how horrible this is. You know, we need to get down to business. So it wasn't like, you know, tell our personal stories.
Again, yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it's like we're giving you information. That's what we're saying. What information are you giving us? You know, we need to listen to you. We need to listen to what you have to say. So during the course of that meeting, got a little heated at times. Cardinal Supic was, you know, interjecting some things, and you know, I had to, you know, stop him. You know, and I just said, "Look, you know, you're not gonna wanna hear what I have to say. You're not gonna invite me back into this room again. I'm pretty sure." But you know, you're under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General right now, and the Diocese of Illinois. You withheld 500 names.
Yeah.
Of credibly accused priests. I mean, that's what I mean. You know, it's like we're pretending, like what? Like this isn't happening?
Right.
And, you know, I was just point blank with them. I said, we don't trust you. I mean, it's like we trust the Illinois Attorney General, you know, and when she says, trust Cardinal Supic, you know, we'll trust Cardinal Supic. And the whole point is that, you know, he's the face of this thing. That's what's so confounding.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, and you're just going to act. So it's the same with the database, for instance, you know, a global database, which is extremely important. And it's not just for the database. It's not just for the victims, obviously. I mean, information can be redacted and so forth. It's public safety.
Yes.
It's minimal public safety.
Yeah.
It's like they're wheeling down. This is the whole point that's astounding to me. You know, Pope Francis declares this war against, you know, sexual abuse, you know, all war against sexual abuse. And he's got all the generals there for the war. You know, he's brought them all in.
Right.
And then, you know, Commander Marx from Germany gets up, you know, and he says, oh, you know, we've shredded documents.
Yeah.
You know, it's unbelievable.
Anybody stand up and say, where's the authorities? We should do something about this.
Well, exactly. So it's like, okay, so the commander, you know, your main commander there gets up and says, you know, the most disloyal thing a general can do, you know, like the absolute betrayal of our army, you know. Well, I know it's been done, and so it's like, you know, we're talking about criminal evidence of child sex crimes. That's what we're talking about.
Wow.
And we destroyed it. I know it. And it's like, I would have been, I don't know, you know, it's like Pope Francis just sort of sat there, didn't say anything because he knew he was going to say it. But it's like, I would have just, like, I don't know, like, leaped up and said, what did you just say?
Yeah.
I can't believe what you just said. Who did it? Where did they do it? And I'd be like, well, the rest of you have done this.
Yes,
you
know?
And that's action. You know, you don't have to change, you know, this thing or go and have that meeting and, you know, change this part of the law and whatever. I mean, it's kind of like that, you know, and it's like, it's really, you know, I think people are getting it around the world, but it's like he can make these admissions. And it's the same thing with that database, because we talked about that. You know, Shakloon has got 4,000-plus cases they've been involved in. These priests are guilty. I mean, it's bad enough to us that, you know, as we brought up, what are you doing having a standing order that you've got crimes committed in one country, sex crimes, and like you're packaging up the information and you're saying, send it over here. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah. Where's the standing order to go to justice officials? But you've got that information right now. You know, and this is information that can help Catholic families and Catholic children around the world. Because, you know,
absolutely.
This thing about expectations, I hate to get worked up about this, but it's like, you know, lower your expectations. You know, that move before the summit, you know, it's like mm-hmm. you make a big spotlight and they go, don't expect too much. And that's basically saying without these basic changes, well, you know, around the world, you know, if you go to church, you bring your child to church or to school. Don't expect that maybe that priest might have done this,
right.
You know, because we're not going to tell you who they are.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, so then you're supposed to decide what, you know, because you don't know who a sex offender is.
Right.
There's no way to know, you know.
Yep.
It's like they don't identify themselves, you know. They often are quite everybody else.
And every priest, yeah, and now every priest has to live under that suspicion.
Exactly.
Until they identify the bad actors, we don't know who the good actors are.
Exactly, exactly. And it's about, you know, I'll use the word occupation because I'm using it that way. That's why you identify them in other occupations working with families.
Right.
When you have findings. And it's like, exactly, it paints everybody with the same brush, and that's what it's going to do, and it's your fault for doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, the reasonable question to ask, if you know this has happened and there's been transference of, you know, one offender cleric to another parish and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
the right question to ask immediately would be, you know, I wonder if some priest in my parish did it.
That's right.
That's not a wrong question.
Nope.
That's not a bad question. That's a perfectly reasonable question.
Absolutely.
And it's like,
yeah.
You're supposed to feel guilty about that? Like, that's like, no.
Right.
So if you're not ejecting these members and identifying them from your group, You're taking the whole group down is what you're doing.
Right.
I mean, and the honor of the group is being completely tainted, and it should be until you do that.
You know, I'm wondering, in the United States, we had the 2002 explosion, and I know a lot of engaged laity, like myself, thought, well, the bishops were responsive, took them a long time, we're going to have incremental gains here, okay, we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. After the McCarrick incident, it kind of ripped the scab off the wound, and people are I've never seen so much unanimity on the part of my listeners in any topic in 30 years.
Yep.
They want change. Everybody is feeling as though, how can this happen? And so in a sense, in the United States, we're wondering. We thought we were ahead of the curve globally on this, but then in November, the Pope told the American bishops to hold back. Do you have any
right.
idea why that would happen?
Well, I mean, in some ways, you know, I was there in 2002 as well. And the change in canon law, because, you know, people don't, you know, canon law, they don't understand this from that. Your listeners probably do, but a lot of people, they have, like, no idea, you know, where this devil in the details kind of thing. And the change in canon law, which was, you know, that you have to remove a priest from ministry that has been found to do this, that brought about, you know, significant action. And
mm-hmm.
what it did is that it gave rights to the victim.
Yeah.
And under church law, it gave you that right under church law, and it put a constraint and limit on the legal rights of the priest. It equaled that right,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really significant. So a lot of, you know, they started removing guys, and they haven't in some places. I mean, the other problem is these review boards. I can't get into that, how those are structured and why they're not getting the information they need because of the way that's been, the way they fixed the charter 6 months afterwards, what they call tweaks. These were not minor tweaks. They were major structural changes
mm-hmm.
in what they originally were going to do. But, I mean, there's no doubt that 2002, that change was a watershed moment. The problem is that, of course, they just limited it to the United States.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think they said, we're not going to do this anywhere else, you know, because of how it rolled out. And, of course, the other issue that, you know, with McCarrick and such, that was inevitably going to occur is that there was nothing, absolutely nothing, about the senior managers
right.
who were covering this up.
That's right.
And if you do not, I mean, if I had a choice between zero tolerance, the one, and zero tolerance, the second thing about bishops, I'd take the bishops. When bishops start getting removed from the priesthood, I'm not talking about resigning
yeah.
and being able to you not tell anybody why they're resigning. We know why, but the Pope won't say it. Okay, he's got to say it. And they get laicized.
Yeah.
That they're going to pay really close attention to that.
Hold it right there, Peter. We'll be back in just a moment with Peter Isley.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization, Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 80% of the referral check to Ave Maria Radio and Students for Life. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org. This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo.
Do you want an affordable health care option that enables you to protect your family and live your Catholic faith? CMF Curo is the Catholic health care ministry that works to bring health to the whole person, spirit, mind, and body. CMF Curo allows you to share health costs with other Christians and is more affordable than health insurance. Go to mycatholichealthcare.com. That's mycatholichealthcare.com. CMF Curo, healthcare fully alive.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
It's time to prepare ourselves for Lent. But what is each of us to do in preparation for these 40 days of purification? On the next Christ is the Answer program, Father Ricardo breaks open for us just what Lent is and how we should approach it. Listen to Christ is the Answer Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday evenings at 6, and Sunday mornings at 11 on Ave Maria Radio and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. Tomorrow, the season of Lent begins. By our penance, we say no to ourselves and yes to God and others. This reverses the power of sin by which we say yes to ourselves and no to God and others. A perfect Lenten practice is to speak up even more for unborn children. Lent calls us to greater love and less selfishness. When we defend the unborn, we defend people who cannot thank us and who don't even know we are defending them. This makes our efforts even more sacrificial and selfless. At times, we will suffer ridicule from others for our pro-life stand. To sacrifice our comfort, our pride, or our popularity is a beautiful Lenten sacrifice that brings us closer to the Lord and brings the unborn closer to safety. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchuk.
Want to grow closer to your spouse? Try something new. Research shows that couples who make an effort to try new experiences have happier and more secure marriages than those who do the same things all the time. You don't need a ton of time or money to mix things up. Cook a meal together for a change and try a new recipe. Take a walk around a different part of the neighborhood. Turn off the TV and play a short game tonight. Let creativity be your guide. For extra bonus points, let your spouse choose something they've always wanted to do and go along with it cheerfully, especially if it challenges your comfort zone. A little openness to new experiences goes a long way to making married life more enjoyable and long-lasting. Want more ideas? Check out my book, For Better Forever. I'm Dr. Greg Popchuk, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. We continue conversation with Peter Isley of the group Ending Clerical Abuse. He was in Rome at the Pope's conference on protecting minors.
Peter, what's the relationship between abusing priests and complicit bishops?
Obviously, most priests do not assault children.
Right.
You know, you can argue about the statistics being somewhat larger than other occupations, and I think you'd make that point, but we're talking about 90% or more obviously do not.
Right.
But the percentage of bishops that have covered up child sex crimes, that's a very large percentage.
Yes, that's
potentially.
Right.
You know, we're talking about, I don't know, 75%, I bet, at least.
Really?
And so that's an overturning of that group of managers. That's that's why I think...
Do you think percentage...
How are they going to do this?
Do you really think the percentage would be that high?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Because it's part of the system in every place.
Yeah.
So, like, even in Dallas, when that came out, at that time, there was like 2/3 of them that had been covering it up. And you saw the investigation by the Boston Globe and the Philadelphia Inquirer, and they're going on publicly available information, right?
Mm-hmm.
Court
Sure.
information and things like that. And I think at that Bishop's Conference in Baltimore, there was like 130 of them. And that's without seeing all these archives and files everywhere
Right.
else. So I think there's going to be a significant percentage of the management. So, I mean, you're looking at that senior management, and, they're not going to, what are they going to make a rule about that? And then, what's going to be left of them? Now, in my opinion, that's okay. That's what you got to do. There's
Right.
400,000 priests in the world. I think you could find a group you could move up and promote along the chain here.
Right.
In which your first question in your interview, I'd have them all resign like you did in Chile, because that was sequenced out in a way that I think was pretty disingenuous. But, I mean, you have them all reapply, right? And your first question in your reapplication interview would be, what have you done about sex crimes in your
Right.
diocese? What's
Right.
going on? That's like question number one.
Sure.
You examine, then, okay, do you rehire this guy or you put him back in as bishop? Or we're going to have to find somebody else.
Yeah. Do you think that, I guess what's holding this up, the American experience, I thought was going to be kind of a leading experience. Has the Holy See been blindsided by an explosion of abuse victims around the globe that they were not anticipating? Because it's been a long time. I mean, 16 years, 17
yeah.
years.
Yeah, I mean, it's come in waves, and it's come geographically. So, the United States, the whole thing was, this is just the United States. I don't know if you've been, how long you've been around with this. But
yeah, I was there for it.
The United States.
Yeah.
I was so tired of hearing that, and then I was like, this is the United States and Ireland.
Yeah.
It's the United States, Ireland, Germany.
Yeah.
United States, Europe, Canada.
Right.
And they full well know that's not what it is.
Yeah.
And so that, it's this containment strategy, right? Keep it contained. Keep it. To a geographical region. They made this extraordinary concession to the United States. But the bottom line is, no matter how much abuse is happening, has happened, or whatever, why don't you have a law? And by the way, a law is not a policy. They're different, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Breaking a law is
Right.
different than breaking a policy.
That's right.
Why do you not have a law in which a universal law, and I brought this up to Shikluna, he took exception, he misunderstood what I said, he got a little worked up, but it was like, okay, you got a universal law about abortion in the church. It's very clear, everybody knows what it is, and it's against church law, period. And sort of the way they're doing this, I said, is like saying, oh, okay, if they're in a culture, because that's their thing, well, these other cultures, they don't understand what abuse is, and it's a whole different matter. Of course, I was wondering, you're hardly the people to teach them what it is, but it's like, okay, you're saying, well, in these cultures, if abortion's okay or it's legal, then we don't have a law against it there
right,
in the church
right.
in that country
right.
until they kind of get around to it,
yep.
and then when they understand it,
then we'll do it.
The law against
yeah.
it. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I see exactly what you mean. So at this point, then, what would you like to see as the next step? The U.S. bishops are going to meet, I'm sure, and come up with policy in the aftermath of this. I can't imagine they're going to stay silent.
No, they got to do something. I mean, there's two things. You can't let go of, the basic internal legal change that has to be made about zero tolerance. That's the start. You cannot let go of that. And that's going to lead to everything else. That's what led to the exposure of cases and priests out of ministry. That's the first thing you got to do, because mm-hmm. you got to get these individuals out of out of children's harm's way around the world. And it's just starting to come out in Africa and places like that, where it's going to be extremely difficult, and is more current. And I think the victim profile is going to change. I think it's going to see more girls and things like that.
Okay.
So, but, you know, regardless, that's what you got to do. Because that's your number one, you know, there's
zero
no
tolerance.
Urgency about this.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's no urgency about this. That's mm-hmm. the amazing thing. You know, it's like, where's your urgency about
right,
this?
Right.
And, you know, Pope Francis said these are ravenous wolves and instruments of Satan. I've never used that language.
Yeah.
I think when you're using language of Satan, I'll just say you got to be, you know.
You've got to have action that's proportionate.
Pretty serious.
Yeah.
Well, of course.
Your actions have
that's,
to be proportionate to the language.
Right. You're
right.
Saying that a human being or group of human beings are instruments of Satan. Okay, that's pretty serious. And I wouldn't necessarily go there. What they are sex offenders. Okay, that I'm quite okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing
mm-hmm.
is, but okay, you use that language and you're saying, well, we got these ravenous wolves. We know because they're going to know. These bishops know, just like they did in the U.S. They know who they are. A lot of them are, of course, around the world. And we're not going to do anything about it. It's like, well, you know, it's like you got ravenous wolves in your parishes and neighborhoods, you know, and you know they rip up children and whatever. And I'm just going to sit here and not do anything about getting them out of your parish.
Right.
I just don't. That's what I just don't. It's like astounding to me.
It is. I agree. I've never been able to put it together. The horror of the crimes and the exaggerated language that's used here, but there's
right,
not
exactly.
proportionate action to it.
Exactly.
There's a French documentary that makes the case that in the United States and other places, those who have been discovered to have sexually abused minors, that many of them were sent to Africa. Have you found that? Is that the case? Do you have any knowledge of that?
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
That's been common, and it makes perfect sense. And the problem there is that's where we get into the issues of religious orders in particular.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Which is another thing with these bishops, you know, in the U.S., they're responsible for religious orders in their diocese, especially with things like this. They have a responsibility. They assign them into places. You know, I don't. It's just amazing to me. It's thought we got nothing to do with them,
right?
Which is just false. It is just absolutely false.
Now, the ordinary of the diocese is responsible for the Catholic Church in that diocese,
right? And he's also saying, well, you know, like in Milwaukee is a very large percentage of religious order clergy. It's among the largest in the U.S. That's over half. And, you know, his Archbishop Lestecky, I have nothing to do with them. Well, you're just conceding that you can't give any, you know, can't say to the people of the diocese, well, I don't know what's happening with the other half.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
And I wash my hands of that. I got nothing to do with that. And it's totally false. We have files from the diocese through the bankruptcy. They took complete control over many of those religious order investigations, total and complete mm-hmm. control. And, you know, it's just that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. You know, that is so I don't know what else to say and I don't like saying it. We say it now in our world all the time. But I mean, it's not true. It's a lie. OK. And I don't because people don't know. Right. It's complicated. You know, it's like, another bad news day with that. They can deal with that. It's just another bad news day. You know, just roll through that. And no one's going to move. No one's going to get out of those positions of authority again, because that's saying it's okay. I don't care how you cut this. It's saying you're in a position of public trust. You've been shown to have seriously violated that public trust, and you get to keep your position of public trust.
Right.
And that, you know, of course, that's going to take the credibility, the public trust and credibility, and I mean public trust. Not just the trust of Catholics, but public trust. And the Catholic Church, historically in the United States, you know, has been in a unique position of,
right.
I think, of public trust.
I agree.
Been able to speak to issues of concern, of moral concern, in an extremely unique way, right? Unlike any other religion has been able to do.
I agree.
And sometimes maybe they've done it irresponsibly, you don't agree with it, you know, or not. But, I mean, that position has been They're another identity group now.
Right.
You know, that position has been, I can't tell you how I think how horrible this
it is.
It is.
I mean, their moral authority,
the
moral authority of the U.S. bishops has declined to that of Bill Cosby, for heaven's sake. A rogue father figure. And I just don't understand why this is not seen as, or at least it doesn't appear as though it's understood by the hierarchy that this is an incredible implosion. I mean, 20 years ago, the public face of Catholicism was two saints, John Paul II and Mother Teresa. Now, the public face of Catholicism is a dirty old man, you know, with a Roman collar or a mitre. And I think we have serious problems here, and I agree with you. I don't think the language, as vigorous as it is ceasing to have any impact because actions don't proportionally follow. Are all the victims, major victim organizations, pretty much in the same place as you on this?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, some are more, you know, reluctant, or you know, they've given up on engaging. I think, you know, church authority. I am not.
Okay.
I think that engagement. I think the meeting we had in the Vatican, be able to come out talking about it the way I am talking to you.
Yeah.
I think that's important.
Good.
I mean, I think survivors have to be part of the solution to the problem.
Right.
They're part of the solution.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah. So I am not of that position. I understand it totally. And there's too much at stake.
Yeah.
I mean, to be able to walk away from it and say, well, forget about it, they can never change. First of all, that's not true. That's letting people off the hook. People can change.
I agree.
And, you know, they can be held responsible. And, in fact, they can't change until you hold them responsible. That's why punishment's important.
Yep.
Punishment opens up the possibility of change in someone. That's what that does. And to me, that's the kernel of Christianity, one of them, that has to be saved. That's worth saving. That you can start from zero. You can. I mean, and you can start over.
Yes.
And, you know, that's not something that, you know, I'll just speak personally, that's not something I'm not, I want to fight for.
Yeah.
So they can change.
Yeah.
These bishops can change.
Yeah.
Some of these offenders, to some extent, can change, but they have to be held accountable.
Yeah.
They have to be punished and held responsible, or you're making it more difficult for them, if they can change, for that possibility to happen. And that's another thing they just don't seem to grasp or understand.
Yeah, well, when you penalize, what you're saying to the person is that your choices were morally significant.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You exercise
precisely
your moral agency poorly, and this is the consequence of it. And if you
correct. Correct.
Yeah.
Right. I don't even like the word accountability when it started being used in years ago. You know, it's like punishment's a perfect
word. Older way of talking about it.
Transparency.
Yeah.
Truth is a perfectly fine word. You know, and transparency turns into its own nightmare. That's ridiculous, in a way. You know, it's like total transparency is a nightmare. You know, it's like it's the worst thing that could. And we're getting it. It's called social media. You know, it's like it's terrible. So, but no, it is. It's for the moral agency and the acknowledgement and respect for the moral agency of a human being.
Yeah, yeah.
And that you have that moral agency, and you're acknowledging that moral agency through consequences, through punishment.
Right.
And your chance to change.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's not something that we can ever give up on. So I think the bishops can change, popes can change, I can change, whatever.
Sure.
And, yes, it's difficult. Well, no kidding. It's difficult. but, you know, nothing worthwhile is going to come easy.
Well, Peter, I'm out of time, unfortunately, but I hope we can talk again on this.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
We'll stay in touch. How do people get in touch with your organization?
Well, they can go online to ecaglobal.org.
All right.
ecaglobal.org.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, you bet.
Peter Isley, again, founding member of Ending Clergy Abuse. You can visit them at ecaglobal.org. I'm Al Cresta.
This program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit St. Paul Street Evangelization. St. John Paul II stated that for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation. So we know we're called, but how do we do it? St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Food for the Journey, Sister Ann Shields, on the struggles of compromising that leads to a failure of growing with the Lord.
Brothers and sisters, you really can make decisions that bring clarity.
Don't just live with the status quo. Don't just say, well, this is the kind of person I am. These are my strengths. These are my weaknesses. It's fine to say that. But so many of us, I think, feel like, well, this is the way I've always been, or this is my personality, or whatever. To excuse ourselves from confronting, am I really following the Lord, or do I have my feet in two different camps, the world and God, the kingdom of heaven and the kingdom of the earth? Do I have my 2 feet in one place, or am I straddling? And if I'm straddling, you're always going to compromise. You're always going to try to find a way through that salves your conscience, but in fact you're trying to serve two masters. And it won't work. So I want to urge you to take a look. Don't just listen to these readings and say, oh, I should think about this sometime. Think about it today.
Sister Ann Shields gives you food for the journey. Weekday mornings at 6:45 and again at 11:30 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Again, want you to follow up on the conversations that we've been having, trying to get an overview of how the church is active in various social settings. So, for instance, we've been talking about Venezuela, we've been talking about Nicaragua, and in both cases, the bishops of those regions are serving as honest brokers, just like Benedict XV tried to do at the outset of World War I. Unfortunately, he did not succeed, but he did try to position himself as an honest broker between competing factions. And that's, you know, that's the role of Jesus as mediator, right? The bishops are trying to imitate Christ in mediating between these human factions that disagree about the common good. So you can follow up on that by going to AveMariaRadio.net, go to the Cresta Guest Archives, and you'll receive more information there on what's happening in Nicaragua. And we'll also have some of the follow-up material dealing with Venezuela, which we'll be discussing. We expect to be discussing it later in the week. We'll also have further information on the protection of minors that Pope Francis was trying to get during the Vatican conference. Peter Isley's information will be available for us in the Cresta Guest Archives as well. We've got another great hour coming up. Stay with me.
This hour of Cresta in the Afternoon is co-produced by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
The Doctor is in on Ave Maria Radio.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray here. The Doctor is in, taking on your questions every day. Oh, make them true false. I got a 50-50 chance of that.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, weekdays at 1 on Ave Maria Radio.
Have you ever noticed how the rise of social media brings with it a blessing and a curse? On the one hand, web-based platforms keep us connected with family and deliver important news about what's going on in the world and in the church. On the other hand, that very connectivity can quickly become both overwhelming and addictive. What starts out as a little peek at a story about a courageous nun becomes a video of a lion saving a toddler, which becomes, boom, 2 hours of wasted time. God gave us time as a precious gift. We'll have to render an account of how we used it. Like any tool, social media has to be handled with discretion and discipline. If you can't say no to binge surfing that sucks up valuable time, then that is addiction, my friend. And an addict is a slave, not a son or daughter of God, which is what we are. This is Patrick Coffin of PatrickCoffin.media. Be a saint. What else is there?
Why would he do such a thing? How often, when we recite the Apostles' Creed and utter the phrase, "He descended into hell," we struggle with the idea of Jesus Christ mingling with demons. In fact, Jesus did not descend into the hell of damnation. He went down into the bowels of the earth to free the souls of the just who had died before his passion and resurrection.